Support for Science Friday comes from Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. It's all at Lumosity.com.
When the Large Hadron Collider, the world's biggest physics machine, first turned on in 2008, it was a big deal for physics. How big?
Nothing like it has ever happened. All the superlatives are justified. This is the case where the hype is approximately accurate.
That's Nima Arkani-Hamid, a young theoretical physicist. He's just one of the scientists you're going to meet watching Particle Fever, a new documentary about the hunt for physics' most elusive particle, the Higgs boson. Now, you might think you know how the story goes, right? On July 4th, 2012, scientists at CERN announced they had found the Higgs, the linchpin of the Standard Model of Particle Physics. But do you know what the Standard Model is? Well, this movie is going to show you. But Particle Fever also shows another side, too, and that is the human side. The painstaking wait over 30, 40 years for some people for the construction of a machine that could test and prove whether the particle even exists. Careers are on the line, a Nobel Prize is at stake, and the world's largest, most complex machine ever built has yet to go online. And Particle Fever puts you in the middle of the human drama right there on the control room floor. David Kaplan and Mark Levinson are physicists and the filmmakers behind Particle Fever. They created this film from 500 hours of footage collected over 7 years. David Kaplan is also a professor of physics at Johns Hopkins University. He joins us from Los Angeles. Welcome, David.
Hey, hi, thanks.
You're welcome. Mark Levinson is the director of Particle Fever, and he joins us here in our New York studio. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Ira.
David, you're a physics professor. You're not a professional filmmaker when you started this project, but you sure became one.
Well, no, I'm still not professional since I didn't pay myself. So I think it counts as amateur. But
why did you do this?
Well, I've told this story about the LHC, about the collider, and really the state of affairs of particle physics to every member of my family who was willing to listen to. And it eventually became clear that this was an incredibly emotional and dramatic story. And it occurred to me that nobody ever got to see what it actually was like to be a physicist. You often learn physics in a very linear way. This discovery was made, and then this, and then this, and it sounds like a boring, complicated process, and a lot of people suffer through science classes because of it. And I thought somebody needed to capture what it was actually like. And this was an amazing opportunity because you could predict a revolution coming, and I knew it would affect us all in a very deep and emotional way.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, what attracted you to the project?
Well, I actually got a doctorate in theoretical particle physics 30 years ago, but I moved into filmmaking, and I was in, but it was fiction filmmaking, so mm-hmm. I was in the narrative feature world. I had just become entranced with what I saw was a different attempt to represent the world. I mean, physics, you know, in theoretical physics, you have this beautiful mathematical construct, and it somehow actually represents mm-hmm. things and gives you insight into the world and how we exist here. And I was finding some parallels in films, that there were films that could also challenge it. So I was in the fiction world, not thinking about doing a documentary. I did think about sometime that possibly it would be nice to reconnect these threads of my life, but I thought it would be in the fiction world. And then I heard about this physicist who was trying to make a film, and he was pitching it to investors that I was going to for a fiction script, and they thought, okay, he's not a filmmaker. He doesn't know if this thing is going to start up, doesn't know what's going to happen. Sounds like a bad bet, and I thought it sounded like a great bet.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about a new film that's coming out called Particle Fever. You do have a PhD in theoretical physics. You spent your career in the film. How different was it to, you know, these two worlds? How different are these two worlds to work in?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, when I was in the transition, I was not that conscious of it. As I said, I was a theorist, and I was a very, very abstract theorist. So, I mean, as a graduate student, I was sitting in a room by myself with a pencil and paper, writing equations, not being paid very much. And then I started writing a script, and I was, again, creating a theory in a room by myself with pencil and paper, not getting paid very much. But it was there was a similarity in that I felt that I was looking at something. I was trying to discern the world. And, you know, in physics, I mean, I was just in awe of this beautiful construct. I mean, the mathematics was the language, was the medium. It was just beautiful, and it had much deeper meaning. These symbols represented something. And in film, I saw that somehow this very mechanical process, very sterile in some ways, you know, it's almost like a bunch of still photos put together, but they created an emotional narrative. It made you think about the human condition, and there was it felt like art. Yeah. I mean, in both instances.
David Kaplan, what I got out of this movie, and I've been following physics for a long time, a big part of this film makes people realize why it was so important to find the Higgs. And you really made it very clear here.
I think it's amazing that part of what makes the film so effective in terms of translating the physics is the need to put it into an emotional context. It's very important that you first connect with the people doing the work and then live those lives. And once you're in the thick of it, somehow, it's sort of like when you have to memorize a whole list of things. If you can create a song out of it, it becomes much easier to memorize it. And somehow putting the physics in the context of a story, a narrative with emotional context with people you like or have some affinity to, makes it a lot easier to absorb. If you actually listen to the descriptions of the physics within it, while I think, you know, we do a good job making the descriptions clear, it's not so different from other things you may hear, say, on your program.
Yeah.
But because of the context, I think people absorb it much better.
Okay, we're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more with Mark Levinson and David Kaplan. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Our number is 844-724-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry also. We'll be right back after this break. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about Particle Fever, a documentary that shows the human side of the search for the Higgs boson. My guests are David Kaplan, producer of Particle Fever, professor of physics at Johns Hopkins University, and Mark Levinson, who directed the film. And you were telling me that it really, you think the way that people can connect with the science is through the human interest side of this.
Yeah, I can't quite explain it, but I think it's when you live the life of it, the whole problem is people want to know the latest, greatest thing, the Higgs boson, how does it work? But most people who are asking that don't know quantum mechanics,
right,
which was started to develop 100 years ago. And so it's very hard in a short radio segment to catch people up all the way. But if you can get in the swing of it with the people who are doing the research, then you can get a sense of at least how progress is made in science and how we go from a point where we know this much, and then you learn a little bit of information and how it either secures your knowledge or unravels. Mm-hmm. And that process, I think, somehow is not understood in a deep level by most of the public. And once you do understand that, you appreciate the steps that are taken.
Mark, did you fight this in your own mind about how much science, how much to keep the geeky part out of it, how much to keep the human interest part in it?
Oh, that was a tremendous challenge. I mean, look, we knew we wanted it to be a dramatic story. I mean, for me, I mean, when I did meet David, I mean, that was, what I was interested in. I was not interested in doing just a typical science documentary where we explained the science. I wanted to make it a human story that, included science but was secondary. And and so when we approached it, I mean, I was always very conscious of the dramatic structure and getting that backbone of the story in place. The science actually came in last. I mean, I think David and I always knew what would come in, but we knew that we could do it, then it was a matter of finding where it would be. And I think the great advantage David and I had is we knew what we could leave out. And so we stripped it down. And, you know, we would have test screenings. And, you know, okay, the first screening, 5 minutes in, people are lost. Okay, we did some changes. Then there are 10 minutes. Then we gradually we found the places that we needed and just the right things that we knew in order to be able to explain it.
Well, I want to play some of those things because we have some clips from the film that illustrate. This is Monica Dunford, who's one of the experimental physicists at CERN. And I love the technique he used of them talking into what must have been a laptop or some sort of camera. And she's describing the mood right before the collider turns on for the first time.
I don't think I can describe right now the excitement about first beam. I mean, the entire control room is like a group of six-year-olds whose birthday is next week, you know, and there's going to be cake and there's going to be presents and all their friends are going to be there and they just, you know, they just know it's going to be great.
You know, they're kind of scattered and I can't imagine.
Yeah, that was really good. All through the film, these scientists are talking sort of a diary, right? Telling us how they feel, what's going on.
Well, that was always a principal idea that we try to make it as personal as possible. And, you know, either with interviews or using these little blog cameras that they had to be able to confessional so that, you know, when we would do the science, somehow talking like that, it made it more accessible.
Well, because there's a scene in the film that you have these two scientists who have been searching for 30 or 40 years, having a small conversation, waiting for the discovery and saying to one another, you know, we could be wrong. After all these years, we'll find out soon enough, waiting all that time.
Right.
When you have 500 hours of footage, you have 475 of very technical stuff that we can't use. But every so often, a physicist lets their guard down, and you get to see, you know.
Well, but what you explained very well, and it's something that made it crystal clear for me, was why scientists were so concerned about what the actual weight of the boson would be when it was discovered. And you were saying, explain what was so important about that. You did it so well in the film.
Sure. Well, part of it is you have to understand we've gone 30 years without a real surprising piece of information at these energies. And so any bit of information we could get was going to throw us in one direction or another. And it's because the Higgs itself is so sensitive to what other physics might be around the corner that its mass, how much it weighs, can actually tell us or give us a little hint about what is coming next. There are a certain class of theories that mostly predict it's a very light particle. And then there's another set of assumptions that are connected to something that might sound a little crazy, like the existence of the multiverse.
Not to this audience. We talk about this all the time.
I know you're just speaking to Michio Kaku, so anything is possible. But people have, in honest ways and careful ways, speculated the possibility that there are multiple universes. And not only that different aspects or different parts of this multiverse actually have different physical laws, or that the numbers associated with the laws in those universes are different, and therefore things manifest differently. And in fact, there is a thought that our universe is, in a sense, biased by the fact that we're here, that most universes are actually quite boring, empty, or full of dust. But the universe where the numbers come out just so produce a universe with enough structure that there are what we call observers, namely us. And that universe must have the particular set of parameters such that we can exist and attempt to start measuring these things. And it's similar to the fact that the Earth is so beautifully placed and has a nice size magnetic field and other properties so that life can exist here. And you might think, if we were the only planet, my God, how could it be that the Earth was placed exactly where it needs to be so that we could have life and liquid water and the sorts of things that organic material would live in. But when you look out into the stars and realize that our galaxy alone probably has 500 billion planets, it's not so mysterious. And the same sort of speculation has been going on over the last 15 years in physics itself, whether the laws of physics are in that way could be a historical accident and not something from a deep principle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from the filmmaking perspective, though, I have to say that we were not so aware from the beginning that we were looking for a specific number. I mean, in fact, when we first started, people were not so much talking about that. I mean, the theorists who have lived with this for a long time, they almost assumed the Higgs was there and were really focusing on something beyond it. And it, in fact, Nima and others really said, you know, oh, it's there, I'm not so interested, you know, I'm thinking about the other things. But what he also said is once it started coming out, it was like this realization that number could tell you so much, since that was the first thing. And suddenly there was a big awareness, and it did require us to sort of rethink some of the way we were presenting the film and the specifics of where that came out.
Because if the number was too big, of what I got from the film, the number was very big, let's say 145 or something like that, then that says that there are all kinds of multiverses out there, and as you say in the film, we're never going to find another particle because they're going to be living out in the multiverses. But if the number is something like 115, then that shows that supersymmetry is alive and all kinds of particles are yet to be found. And so what number do they find? They find, 125, which, if I'm wrong or right, would this, David, be right on the cusp of where we still don't know which one is right?
Absolutely. It really is right on the cusp. It's perfect for anybody making a documentary film. But... I mean, the truth is, of course, it's much more complicated. Every theory has lots of parameters, but there are biases in any of them. And if it really came out to be 140, 145, I think you'd see a lot more people abandoning supersymmetry.
Yeah.
And if it came out to be 115, I think people would have dove in detail, more detail, to the type of supersymmetric theories that could explain it. And it was a beautiful wrench thrown in to our little world, and has excited a lot of us.
There were two other, I want to get to another clip from the film, but one of the other beautiful things about the film, something I've discovered over the years talking to scientists, is the wide gulf between the theoretical physicists and the experimentalists. And I've talked to some, you know, they just never talk to each other. They're in different worlds. And in no better place in this film than in this film is that evident in Particle Fever, where you have guys at a blackboard who spent 40 years just writing numbers, and then you've got to tell these other experimentalists, okay, now you go build that five-story most complex machine that's ever existed on the Earth so you can tell whether we're right or wrong. And that came out very well in the film.
Oh, that was definitely an intention. I mean, I think for people in the field, you're very, very aware of it. And people out of the field just don't realize it. And there is an important distinction. And I think, you know, even for me personally, I was a theorist. I had hardly any contact with experimentalists. And I think in the intervening years, they did grow closer. I think the LHC helped. I think we're doing our part with this film as well.
All right, let's talk about the why people do physics, why they're searching for physics. Take another little clip from the film. I think Savas Dimopoulos, one of the theorists in the film, sums it up well, talking about why do humans even do science?
Why do humans do science? Why do they do art? The things that are least important for our survival are the very things that make us human.
That's such a great, great idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, you know, look, was very important to me to sort of try to capture that aspect of it. I mean, I made that transition myself. And, you know, it is the way I see the world. I see these as complementary. And Savas just so beautifully encapsulated it.
You know, David, you summed it up in the film in a little video of a presentation you were making, a lecture. I guess it was at CERN. Aspen Center, because we've covered this over the years many, many, many times. So we talk about dark energy, we talk about dark matter, and we ask physicists to say, okay, I have to ask you the question that all the public is going to ask: what's the practical aspect? What of any practical value comes out of this? And you gave the perfect answer that we'd like to hear, which is nothing.
I have no idea. That's right. I mean, this is the type of research you can't put a simple practical purpose on. all of those other things are very important. The research to cure diseases or to secure the climate or anything where you know a need and you address it. In fact, the funding for the type of thing we do, while when you describe the monolithic LHC, it sounds insanely big, it's actually incredibly small compared to all of the research done. But somebody needs to be on the cutting edge where we truly are pushing the deepest questions. And when you start asking, okay, we're spending all this money, what's the practical aspect? That's not the way we're thinking. We're really trying to push knowledge beyond where we are, and you never know what comes out of that. Mm-hmm. And the biggest revolutions are always coming from that type of research.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Mark Levinson, director of the new documentary Particle Fever, David Kaplan, who produced Particle Fever. He's also professor of physics at Johns Hopkins University. It's out there in theaters now. People can go see it.
It is out there. It just opened in New York at the Film Forum Wednesday, and it'll be here for a couple of weeks. It's just opening in Los Angeles tonight, and then it's basically rolling out around the country everywhere. You can look at our website, particlefever.com, to see where and when.
They said this film is so good on so many different levels, from the fact that there's not a formula anywhere, really, that you have to know to understand it. There are a couple of things on blackboards, but the way the graphics are used, just a simple little showing the peak of the bump, you know, that you get coming out of a Large Hadron Collider, where you think that the Higgs boson is. Why these things are important, why people have spent their lives, most of their lives, looking for it, and even just a small graph of how it, you know, that little spot in the middle of all the particles, how you constructed that, explains more than I think, you know, a lot of people could think they could understand.
Well, I think that's really why we are finding people are very enthusiastic, because I think if, you know, people are interested in these questions. I mean, that's the truth, and they want to know it, and they don't want it dumbed down, but they need it accessible. And so when they find out that, in fact, this is an incredibly human drama, they can relax. They don't have to worry about this, you know, making them feel dumb or not understanding it, because before they know it, they're sitting on the edge of their seats and they're cheering. And I mean, the greatest thing of all is people come out and, you know, they're like cheering. Is it supersymmetry? Is it the multiverse? And
But the LHC is closed right now for an upgrade. It's going to reopen in 2015, right?
It needs another year. February 2015 is the current scheduled upgrade. And it will be higher energy than it ran at when we were filming.
You know, you've made me now decide I have to go out and go see it, because I've never seen the LHC.
It's pretty impressive. It is. I mean, look, as Monica says, even for somebody who knows what it's like to stand there and just look at this thing, and as she says, it's not that it's big. It's the fact that it's tiny.
But you know what? Also, the fact that it's not in the United States means it doesn't get a lot of attention. You know, when they tried to build it in Texas and it failed. This is as complex as a moonshot. And you make that point. It takes as much skill and energy. But because it's not here, we're not covering like a countdown to that sort of thing.
Well, and you're not seeing a human put his foot down on some land. You're looking at. But, you know, I mean, it's amazing how excited people get about seeing a little blip on a screen if it's presented right.
Yeah.
You don't see the moon, but you see the control room.
Yeah.
All the excitement there.
And you get to see the frustration, the failure of when the helium was leaking out.
Absolutely.
That was again, one of those things when that happened. I mean, this 10 days after I started shooting, this thing completely changed things. And, you know, for me, it was a mix of things. I mean, first was, oh, my God, you know, what kind of film is this going to be if we don't have anything happen? Then, of course, it was, wow, we have this great drama. And, mixed in was, but what about the physics community? Oh, hopefully it gets going.
Not to mention the piece of bread the bird dropped. That comes out some other time later.
Yes, right.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck with the film. Mark Levinson, director of the new documentary Particle Fever. David Kaplan, who produced Particle Fever, is also professor of physics at Johns Hopkins University. And as they say, out there in theaters now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can I say thanks to my daughter who's listening?
Quick, you want to say thanks to your daughter? Quickly.
Hi, Eva. That's good.
There you have it.